Petroglyph Podcast.
Welcome everybody to the second part of the interview with Mike Legg. Tell us a little bit about Petroglyph and how it started and you know, the project that you've done so far, EAW. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that from your, you know, perspective.
We had such a wonderful experience at Westwood, and when Westwood was shut down, you know, we just said, let's stay in Las Vegas and keep making great games. So when we started Petroglyph, our goal was, you know, we wanted to really be all about the team, the people at work. We wanted to have a great place where people could come to work, you know, enjoy working together every day, work together on like really difficult challenges and problems to solve so that we all kind of keep learning and fulfilling our potential. So our motto is, you know, that, you know, we've always talked about, oh man, we want to make games that we love to play, because there's a big gamer culture here. With Empire at War, as we were so under the gun with that project, because we started from scratch and you know, we went from absolutely nothing to being between alpha and beta in 24 months. And that was a huge undertaking. So we're in our third office now, and we're actually going to be moving into our fourth office because the company is very gradually growing. But it was really fun as the multiplayer game came online and we really were able to start playing it. And especially as we've gone into the patch, you know, the patches and stuff, as we've been able to continue to balance it. I think multiplayer, you know, and the online experience and playing with your friends, you know, cooperatively or competitively is just such a big thing. And I think that's what we really, really want to embrace just because we love it so much.
Yeah, I think it's definitely built a really great culture. It's hard to design good games if you don't play games yourself, you know? And having everybody with the same types of hobbies, same types of interests here helps create that culture. I mean, I'm pretty new here, and I know I've enjoyed the culture quite a bit. It's been like no other company I've worked for.
Yeah, and the nice thing now is, now that we have, you know, so much of our technology in place, we can spend so much more time now actually playing our games, especially multiplayer,
yeah,
way before they're launched. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in part war. Boy, did we want a lot more time to, like, you know, play the game together, because that's where you really get a lot of feel. So, you know, I'm glad that we've been able to keep improving the experience, you know, with the patch and everything,
yeah,
like that.
Definitely.
And as we develop our two new games, you know, that we're working on right now with Forces of Corruption in the Sega real-time strategy game, internally we'll be able to play that together a lot and mm-hmm. really get the feel for it and the balance. And just, you know, that was what happened with us on Command & Conquer. We would, you know, people would stay and play the game late every single night. Yeah, we were
awesome.
We couldn't get enough of it. We'd have to kick people,
yeah,
out of the office.
Uh-huh.
You know, Brett would come around and go, you know, everybody go home, you know, get out of here, go home. And, you know, it was like midnight, get some good sleep. And then everybody would work really hard the next day to get new features in for that night's build. And then we'd play it again. And it was just, you know, so that's, I'm looking forward to more of that.
It's what you would expect from a game company for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. So I have a few more questions here. I guess they're more president related questions.
Sure.
I mean, where do you see Petroglyph going from here in the future? And what types of goals do you guys have?
Well, Petroglyph as a studio, currently we're 47 people. I'm sure that we are going to continue to gradually grow as we have been, but one of the goals is to stay as small and tight-knit as we can. We find that we can be extremely efficient keeping the team small and having fast communication and rapid prototyping and quick turnaround on ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So as a company, we want to stay, you know, as small as we can. We don't want to grow into like the biggest game developer, you know, ever or anything mm-hmm. like that. We believe that quality of life and working together day to day and having a good time working together is one of our most important things. And keeping our company culture strong, you know, like going out to movies and going out to dinners and company barbecues and just, you know, game nights and things like that, mm-hmm. I think are just really, really important. Where we go from game-wise, you know, one thing is strategy, I think, is very near and dear to our heart. So I believe that we'll always be developing some type of strategy game as at least one of our projects, because we really love real-time strategy and we think that there's a great potential for evolving the genre there. The other big thing, I think, is online play. And online communities and playing with your friends. A lot of us play MMOs here. A lot of us play online cooperatively and competitively. And with, you know, what Microsoft is doing with Vista and, you know, Live Anywhere with Xbox 360, being able to connect with your friends and play and chat
is really great. It's taken our office by storm. And so we're having a lot of fun with that. Mm-hmm. And so basically, you know, what Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo are all doing with their new online presence, you know, with the broadband and being able to plug right in and being able to play, you know, the PSP and the DS, being able to play over Wi-Fi. I mean, that's just fantastic. So, you know, our feeling is that, you know, the future is really in really, you know, compelling multiplayer.
And so do you think this influence is going to start influencing our games as well?
And absolutely.
To what degree do you think?
It's an incremental process, you know, where we have to experiment with game ideas and prototype them and try them out and play them in the studio and and see how we like them and then and continue to evolve them. But from all of our projects, you know, we're going to try and, you know, and really work hard to have really, you know, great, compelling multiplayer experiences as well as a good, solid single-player experience.
That sounds really exciting, actually.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
The last question that we have here, what would you recommend to others who want to get started in the industry, maybe with your same background, like computer science majors or whatnot, coming out of school? I mean, it's a lot different now than it was when you got started. I mean,
yeah, totally.
How do you get started?
Well, the two main paths right now are a lot of the universities are offering curriculums in game development for art and design and programming. It's amazing some of these programs that these colleges are creating. So that's one way to just start the track is, you know, people start learning how to program and, you know, work on art and 3D and design mechanics from that. Then there's universities like DigiPen that is a college that specializes purely in game development. We have one of our guys here, James Yarrow. He came, he had graduated from Oxford and then went and got a game programming degree at DigiPen. And James had a really great experience there because he got to work with a small team developing a small-scale game project. And so they were exposed to programming, you know, for AI, networking play, you know, for multiplayer, you know, UI and, you know, game logic, rendering, audio, and that was really cool. And so he got to work with a small team and they got to put all those elements into their game on a smaller scale. And you learn how to work with people. And you get to learn, you know, how the flow of a game works. And so, you know, there's the best way to learn is by doing. And that kind of leads me into my the second path, too, is independent game development is fantastic these days. With the internet, there are so many great resources online. For people that want to learn about independent game development, you know, there's these great toolkits and tons of great references on for how people can get started in independent game development as a hobby. And whenever we have somebody come and interview here that has, you know, that brings a sample of some work, even if they've never worked in the industry before, but they bring a sample of a project that they wrote. I mean, be it like even like an Asteroids game or a Defender game or something that, you know, has some samples of work that applies, it shows a lot of passion, it shows dedication, it shows self-motivation, and we're always extremely impressed by that. So I think if people, you know, are really encouraged to be in the game industry, you know, don't hesitate to start now. Get started in your free time. It's amazing what you'll learn. And there's these great forums where people can ask questions and get lots of good answers. And then to summarize it, at the Game Developers Conference this year, you know, the Independent Games Festival was there, and there was just fantastic stuff that independent game developers had done. And, you know, some of these guys were college guys and some of these people were you know, just hobbyists, but they did amazing stuff. So, yeah, I think between, like, you know, if you haven't gone to college yet and you want to, you know, do college, you can look at the game development curriculums there and it's never too late to start.
Actually, even for EAW, have you seen some of the stuff the modders have done?
Oh,
you know, the model renders.
Oh, yeah,
such?
That's another great thing. Yeah, the mod communities are fantastic on so many of these games. And Empire at War, you know, we've given out the tools that our artists and designers used to make mods, and you know, so they can make maps and they can create new units and export 3D models and put new things, new content into the game and create new campaigns. And that's another great point is the mod community, which kind of falls into like the independent game development,
yeah,
and kind of like the hobbyist layer. But yeah, we've had guys that have applied, that have, you know, shown us their work making mods for other games and maps, and that's another great way to prove your talents, because you can use existing tools that the teams use now, you know, and that, you know, I mean, anybody that's making mods for Empire at War is using all the same tools that we're using here. You know, with our XML, you know, we've released our XML files, we've released our Lua files, you know, all the Lua scripts, you know, the map editor, the exporter, you know, it's like, so they're using all the same stuff we did to make the game. So yeah, if people can make great content, they can submit it, you know, whenever they're looking to apply.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, that pretty much wraps that up. You guys heard it. I mean, get out there, start doing what you love, and send in your resumes.
Yeah, it's never too late to start. Always ask questions. You know, that's the main thing. If you ever get stuck, just go online and ask questions. There are so many helpful people out there.
All right, thanks a lot for your time, Mike.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right, that's Mike Legg, president of Petroglyph, and this is Kevin Yu, your community manager, signing out. Thank you.
End of transmission.
What about, I mean, some stories that you have? I'm sure, like, throughout all these years of game making, you must have some interesting highlights.
Well, over the years, we've just been hugely into practical jokes and pulling gags on each other, and it's almost been a day-to-day staple. Now, I had, during Blade Runner, I had rescued a baby mockingbird that had fallen out of his nest, and he lost his leg, and so he was a one-legged mockingbird named Pogo. And so I was raising this baby bird while working crazy, crazy crunch hours. Uh-huh. And so this little bird, he ate mealworms, and so I found a place online that I could order mealworms from, and I was supposed to get 200 mealworms in this little container, and they screwed up the order and sent 2,000 crickets. And so what was amazing about these crickets was they were in two boxes, and they were so loud, and they were chirping, but you couldn't hear, like, where they were, like, you couldn't tell, like, where the noise was coming from. So we took the crickets, and one of our usual victims was Ted Morris, who's our development director in Empire at War. We took 2,000 crickets, and we put them in his office amongst his stuff under his desk, and his office was just so loud with crickets chirping, but Ted, he couldn't figure out where the sound was coming from, and they were in there all day, and people would walk into his office and just come and enjoy and listen to these crickets, because they were in a box, and he couldn't tell, but it was so loud. It was just like, I mean, 2,000 crickets chirping, and he couldn't find them. Another gag we used to do is we used to love taking it. We got a DAT deck, and we started recording the paging system at work, and then we'd wait for certain people to be gone or somebody to be off. Like Brett Sperry, we'd get recordings of Brett paging certain people, and then we'd wait for a day where Brett was off, and then we'd start paging the people to Brett's office with Brett's voice over the intercom system.
Mike
and
Leg,
that caused
two, three,
so
one.
Much chaos
Mike
and
Leg,
panic
two, three,
and confusion, because we thought Brett was in the office, and he wasn't in the office, and it was really, really hilarious. And I think one of our other great things that we did was we had our designer on Blade Runner. He was really this really fun, funny guy, and we just used to love to mess with him just because he was so reactionary. And what we did was we hid some speakers up in his ceiling, and we ran those speakers to a computer in this guy James McNeil's office, and we wrote this program that we could play sound effects on anybody's computer, so you could actually transmit WAV files and play over anybody's computer around the office. And what we'd do is we'd send sound effects to this thing, and this computer in James's office, and it would play in David Leary's ceiling. And poor Dave, he would be in there working away, and then suddenly he'd hear like sawing, he'd hear drilling, he'd hear footsteps. Yeah, he'd hear like moans and groans, and he'd hear yelling, and just we just play these sounds, and he just, you know, just thought it was like noises around the office. He thought like one time that there were air conditioner repairmen up on the roof working on the air conditioning,
and they were moaning.
Well, no, we kind of would do this like ghostly moan every now and then. That was like kind of like, you know, this kind of weird spooky thing. But the greatest thing was what we did. was we would play this cricket in his ceiling. It was a sound effect of a chirping cricket, and it would play every, we'd fire it off like all the time, and he was always complaining about this cricket in our meetings and stuff. And one day he came into a Blade Runner meeting, and he looked so sweaty and disheveled, and he walks in, and everybody started laughing, and we're like, what's wrong? He goes, you know, I took all the furniture out of my office to find this cricket, and I still can't find it. And that was the point where we let him in on the joke, and he was quite upset. But so it's just been a, you know, many, many years of just messing around with each other and playing gags on each other. So it's been great.
When April Fool's comes around, it should be pretty fun around here as
no
well.
No doubt.